Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
You are very welcome to another episode of the Sideshow. On the line today is a lady who I have admired from afar for some time. We'll get into that, hence the reason for the Sideshow, says you. Why have you admired her, Peter? Well, let me introduce you to Sarah Venn. Sarah is based in Bristol in the UK. Sarah, how are you? Welcome to the Sideshow.
I'm very good, Peter. How are you?
I'm fantastic as always, Sarah. Let me break this down if I can. Why would you pop up on my radar, or shall I rephrase that? Who are you and what do you do, shall I call it, for a living or for a mainstay job?
So I run an organisation in Bristol called Incredible Edible Bristol. So that will be one of the reasons. But also I'm a big social media user, having been a horticulturalist for a long time. And so I like to post pictures of nice plants along with some slightly ranty stuff, I think, which is probably why you've picked me up, about, you know, change and the world and how gardening can really help people.
Well, let's go to the first part of what you just said. What, for those who are unaware, is Incredible Edibles?
So Incredible Edible is a worldwide movement which supports communities to make change through food growing, effectively. But that very quickly moves on to communities becoming really resilient and kind of knowing each other and having these great conversations around food and cooking and all of that kind of stuff. But just sort of helps people to get to know their neighbours.
So let me get into this now just for a second, because I won't say I'm not aware of Incredible Edibles, but if I was to join do I join a group in the morning?
There are 120 groups in the UK, and they're all doing it slightly differently. So if you moved to a new town, you would look around and you would go, oh, we've got an Incredible Edible here. And then you would just go and get involved. You would just go and say hello, and somebody would say hello back, and they would give you a cup of tea, and they would tell you about what they're doing. So in Bristol, because obviously we're an entire city, and yeah, that was probably a slightly crazy thing to do, we have lots and lots of different gardens all across the city that are run by different groups and different volunteers who we kind of support in whatever way they need that support. And yeah, absolutely, you can just rock up, you know, with anybody you want to rock up with. You don't have to even garden, just come along for a cup of tea and a chat.
Do you grow your own? Is that the crux of it? Is it a gardening thing or is it an eating thing?
It's both. It's absolutely both. So it's gardening, as in come along, get growing, work out how to grow, take it back to your community, start something off there. It's, you know, that kind of thing. But then absolutely it's cooking. So it's looking at what we've grown, helping people with recipes and ideas. And the food that we grow, because we do everything in public realm spaces, is available to anybody to help themselves to. So, you know, we've got a big online presence with lots of recipes and lots of ideas, and we hold events for people to come along and learn about cooking as well as about growing.
Why did you get involved with this, Sarah? Because your background, and let's go that direction if we can, it's not of grow your own, or it's not of being involved with Incredible Edibles. You were something else before that. What did you study?
So I'm a horticulturalist by trade. I mean, I'm a grower. So I've always loved plants. I've always loved growing. But actually, I've always grown my own food since being, you know, really tiny. And I've also always really felt that the environment and the way that gardening can affect the environment, you know, in the urban sphere is something that we've lost. You know, it's really important that people know how what these skills are and how they can get involved with them. And in a city, you know, we have huge problems with social isolation, mental health, you know, not severe issues, but just issues where people have just got a bit lost. And, you know, we find that people come along and there's 101 stories behind why people come along. But actually what we do is we don't say to them, what's your story? We just say, you know, let's get involved. Let's have a conversation. And for me, although I love plants and I love horticulture and I love, you know, for me, people are the things that make plants and horticulture and gardening the exciting thing that it is.
You've got a habit of doing what I do sometimes, Sarah, which is when people ask me, what's your name? I go off and I do a Dylan Moran and I tell them something entirely different. No, no, that's absolutely fine. It makes for a really good radio because you've just told me something that I wasn't entirely aware of and never thought I'd get to. But what did you study exactly?
Oh, well, I studied fine art as a first degree. And then I studied horticulture in the workplace and, you know, in courses. And then I did a master's in garden history and conservation. So actually my whole kind of interest, real passion about sort of food growing and the history of food growing kind of came out of that master's degree.
As I do for a living, did you get into building and designing and creating gardens at any point along the way?
No, not at all. I left college having done this fine arts degree. Kind of looked around me and sort of fell into catering, and did catering for a few years and then realised it wasn't what I wanted to do. And I just sent an email to my local nursery and said, hi, I really have made a mistake. I don't know why nobody ever said horticulture to me throughout my entire childhood and education, because actually, you know, I was the kid that was constantly growing sweet peas and always asking for a school garden and all of that stuff. I'd really like to enter the world of horticulture and I'm really not quite sure how to do it. And I'd already started studying RHS level 2 at that point. And they said to me, okay, if you want a job, come and get a job. And that was it. So I've not done a huge amount of sort of design. Design wasn't what I went into it to do, although inevitably you kind of get dragged into the world of design. But actually, you know, I'm a grower. I grow plants. You know, that's what I absolutely love to do. I love to put a seed in the ground and see it end up or you know, a cutting or whatever, and see it end up as a beautiful plant that you can give to somebody, sell to somebody, you know, whatever.
Do you find, Sarah, because when I was doing my, I rarely do research because, as I like to describe the Sideshow, it's a little bit like chatting somebody up at the bar. You've never met them before. And to, I guess, listeners of the Sideshow get to hear that conversation retold, and as it should be. But I know from I guess, following you over the last while, one of the things that you tend to do is to hit around the schools or the colleges or second level education places and say to them, look, this is a viable career path. You should do that. How is that going for you, and bearing in mind what you have done yourself?
It's really, really, really difficult, because the reality is that schools are up to their eyeballs in teaching people that, you know, what we historically call the three R's, and horticulture very rarely hits something that even teachers realise is a good career path. It's often, you know, I regularly go into primary schools who say to me, oh, you know, we've got this great school allotment and we use it, but actually it's the difficult children who really get to use it the most. And you know, I don't deny for a minute that actually, you know, in terms of something that's calming and whatever, a garden is the ideal place to be. But that feeds to quite young primary school children, gardening something that the naughty kids do. And so, yeah, it's a real struggle. But I think, you know, I think we are starting, I hope, with the young Horts, who have had a huge success with their campaign. I think people are starting to realise that actually the jobs that we do now are not going to be the jobs that are needed in 20 or 30 years' time. And so, yeah, it's an ongoing challenge, but it's something I'm absolutely passionate about. I'm working with a group of young people at the moment who are doing an RHS challenge called Planet Green, and they are an extraordinary bunch of young people who are not in the slightest bit academic, but who have got a huge amount out of doing this, effectively a design project within their school. None of them had ever even heard the phrase horticulture. They didn't know what it meant. They didn't realise that there was anything else than cutting grass and brush cutting shrubs to be done in the world of horticulture. So, you know, there's the beginning of change, I think, but it's a long, hard fight.
Let's go in there for just a second, because you're talking to a guy who used to grow plants under his bed, who did his first garden at 10 years of, well, truth, let's be honest about it, did his first garden when I was 10, went and studied horticulture. I've done every single menial task. And I say menial, it's not that I didn't learn anything when I was doing it. It was and is and has been more a case of that it's that progression up the ladder. And equally, I know there are people who love nothing more than sitting on a ride on lawnmower, something that I mean, for 8 hours a day, something I could never do because I can't sit still for very long. You would have gone into the nursery, if you'll allow me use this word, at the bottom rung. In nursery terms, the bottom rung or the start or the point at which you start is usually doing the cleaning of the beds and the pots and the repotting. Nobody I know would turn around and say, well, that's really attractive, number one. And number two, something that essentially it always comes back to is that the money at the starting level, at entry level into horticulture, is usually a bit pants. And I can hear James Wong and myself included in this one and Mark Diacono screaming at me for putting it like that when really I should be saying something that it is along the lines of view. But to play devil's advocate, is that far off the mark?
God, no, not at all. I mean, I went from a sensible salary in my mid-20s to earning basic minimum wage. But I don't think that the reality of horticulture is that anybody goes in it to be wealthy. Without doubt, if you make it up to production manager type stage, you know, people earn sensible grown-up salaries. The reality of horticulture, of gardening, of whatever you want to call it, is that, you know, originally, you know, 50, 60 years ago, what would have happened was you would have gone into your council nursery aged 14, 15, you know, you would have earned almost no more than £0.50 a week, but you would have, you know, it's all about learning a craft. And I think we've kind of forgotten that actually, you know, yes, apprentices may not earn a huge amount of money, but what they are doing is that they are learning their craft. And I think we've forgotten that horticulture is a craft and that has to be learned. You can't learn it overnight. The reality of nursery work is, it doesn't matter what level you're at. Even at production manager stage, there are going to be times where you go, okay, I'm out weeding today, or I'm helping these guys clear these beds, or whatever. It doesn't ever get much more glam than that. It's not a job for you if you want to be glam. But the reality is, you know, there's a good career progression throughout all sorts of different things. You know, people go, oh, yeah, garden design, but there's so much more than that. You know, there's nursery work. There's science work. You know, I know plenty of people who earn good livings by being gardeners.
Yes, and that is true. And I don't get me wrong, for those of you listening at home to this, I am very much on Sarah's side. I absolutely love what I do. And as I explained yesterday to a very good friend of mine over a pint of Guinness, the reason why I do the Sod Show is because, I make gardens for a living Monday to Friday and Saturday and sometimes Sunday, usually working for myself, sometimes 16, 18 hours a day and more. And then in my spare time, I get to talk about gardens. And that's kind of it in a nutshell. I don't play golf because I found the one time that I did play it, I became very critical of the planting next to the first green. I threw the clubs over my head and I walked straight up to the bar, and I've never been to a golf course to play since. The role of TV and radio, Sarah, in horticulture, in modern day horticulture and in context, when I, and you touched on it there briefly, but historically, and I've said this before, horticulture on TV as much, and I, again, in brackets, I absolutely loved every second of it, was a grown man with a beard standing in a potting shed doing something or other. Somewhere along the lines, we had Rachel de Tem came on the TV screens, Charlie Dimmock et al., and we started to see ladies come upon our screens. We now, if you'll allow me say it this way, we now have the young Jamie Butterworths coming through the ranks, and the role of the RHS ambassadors, and they do play a massive role in this. How important is it to have somebody that you can, be they young, old, male, female, how important is it that you identify with them, and has that changed, or do we need to do more in that department?
I think we absolutely have to do more in that department. I think, you know, traditional garden media is fine, it is what it is, but I think, you know, although it's great to have constant programs and magazines about, you know, what to do now, and here's, you know, I think we need to be concentrating on the majority of people. And the majority of people by 2050, which isn't that long away, will live in a city and probably won't have any access to a garden. So how do people get involved in gardens? It's a really, really, really important question that the media can help us work towards. So, you know, I think we need people that we can relate to. We need normal people in normal gardens doing normal stuff, but we also need loads of inspirational stuff, but not inspirational stuff like Chelsea, which of course has its place and is amazing, but inspirational stuff that people can go, oh, okay, I can do that in my back garden. I can do that on my balcony. I can do that on my allotment. That kind of real, that kind of stuff that just makes you stop and go, wow, that's what I want to do. And I think we're lacking in that.
You can big up Peter Donegan and the Sod Show here, Sarah, if you wish to.
But that's what we need. We need more exciting, but we do. We need more exciting podcasts. We need more exciting blogs. We need lots more exciting online presence. Or, you know, that isn't following the traditional media, but that is doing its own thing. We need that kind of stuff, because actually, if we're gonna bring young people into horticulture and we're going to excite people about gardening, because let's face it, we're talking about two different things here. We're talking about horticulture as an industry, and we're talking about gardening. So how do we, as that horticultural industry, inspire those people to, you know, rather than go out shopping on a Saturday afternoon, how do we inspire them to grow stuff, to have, you know, to garden? How do we do that? I think absolutely we need to look at a far more progressive and exciting way of introducing people to the industry, and to you know, to what we're all involved in. You know, you and I are exactly the same, Peter. We live, breathe, and, you know, it's our entire lives. But for some people, it's just something that they could do on a Saturday afternoon. So how do we inspire them to do that? I think that's the Garden Media's next big thing that it has to do and move forwards with.
This is not in any way to be critical of anything, but you say, you know, we need more inspiration, we need more, let's say, if you'll allow me paraphrase you slightly, but we need more sod shows, or we need more something along the lines of that. You know, in context, you know, the Sod Show is the longest running garden radio show and podcast in Ireland anyway. Garden radio shows in the UK, BBC Gardener's Question Time, which I absolutely love, but it's not in any way akin to the Sod Show. You have So Grow Repeat from the Guardian newspaper. And somewhere in between, we end up with this, no disrespect again to anybody, but you end up with a Mary has a problem with her hydrangea, and unless you have a degree in botanical Latin, you are never going to understand the bits and bobs of what you should do in the garden, raking the leaves, you know, mowing your lawn, scarify your lawn, that kind of, and I'll call it claptrap general advice. And it reminds me a little bit of reading star signs in newspapers. Which I don't do, obviously, but at the same token, it's just a little bit of a copy and paste, and even if it's frozen outside, this week's newspapers will say something along the lines of, and I'm kind of in the middle going, well, people say we should back the guys like the Sod Show, but essentially, it you know, let's be frank about it, I'm obviously not sitting on the Jonathan Ross show at this moment in time, or the Graham Norton show being interviewed here. And a spade is a spade, if you'll pardon me using that cliche. Is there a future for the oddball little nutter like me? And if you'll allow me include you in that bracket, and you as well?
I think that there is. So what I find here in Bristol is that we have this great community of really quite young people who are all really busy getting on with growing loads of stuff, and they all have allotments, and they all love their coffee, they all have amazing moustaches. They're, you know, and when you say to them, so you're a gardener then, they go, no, I'm not a gardener. What's your title? What would you think that you are then? You're not a gardener, but you're a hobby gardener. No, I'm not. No, I'm a grower. I grow stuff. Okay, so what's the difference? Well, the difference is I don't want to be labelled with something that my granddad was labelled with. So, you know, I love being on my allotment, or I love being in my garden, and I love experimenting. And you know, lots of these guys are sort of playing with aquaponics or with vertical growing, or, you know, and actually having some quite significant success. But I think that our terminology, and I think that the way that we've kind of, you know, the media continues to talk about gardening is in those traditional ways. So I think what we have to do is somehow, and I don't have the answer to this, and my goodness, I wish I did, but we can work on it. We have to say to these people who, you know, I'm lucky enough to meet in my everyday kind of life, actually, are you aware of the Sod Show? Are you aware of all these amazing blogs? Are you aware of, you know, all the, I mean, there are some really great YouTube people out there doing stuff. Are you aware? Because actually, often they aren't. And when you say, oh, you should have a look at this, or you should have a look at that, they go, oh, God, we didn't know that was there, but now we will. So I think it's just a case of just keeping doing what we all do.
Okay, now, and while we're on that subject, I do have to say, in the YouTube department, high five to the Skinny Jean Gardeners, big high five.
Absolutely.
They are a little bit of class act, and probably one of the few garden how-to video crews that make me smile on a regular basis. Sarah, you have a mild list of things that get on your goat, if I might put it that way.
Yeah.
Give me the list could be very, very long. It could also be very small. Give me a couple of one or two worders that an irk you slightly, if you might.
So, dare I mention Gardener's World?
You may indeed mention the Gardener's World.
That gets on my goat. It's improving slowly. But, you know, there's a long way to go, and that's well documented, and I won't say anything else. What really gets on my goat is the inaccessibility of a lot of gardening stuff to a lot of people. The whole kind of white middle-class gardening world that, you know, I've been a part of, you know, and hands up to that, that makes people who might live in, you know, tall blocks of flats without gardens think gardening is completely inaccessible to them. That really gets on my goat.
Okay, well, let's crisscross that slightly. Number one, love Gardener's World. Think Monty is an absolute legend. Had the pleasure to listen to Carol Klein speaking at the Garden Media Guild Awards, and what an absolute lady she is, etc., etc., and we shall move on from there ever so slightly. But to the gardening and how it might be perceived, if that's a better way to rephrase what you just said, I would see it slightly different in that, one, historically, going back, let's say, to around the time of Perennial, the Gardeners Royal Benevolent Society being formed, gardening was something that was done by the working class for those who were of the grandeur, let's call it that. And at the same token, you now are in a scenario where it's perceived slightly differently, or it's done slightly differently, in that I know around the time of being at Hampton Court Palace Flower Show, and Ben Brace, who was living in a flat or apartment, as I might call it, he had a little sill just over his what would have been the entrance into his door. And on that was a series of pots. I mean, it wasn't a garden. It was possibly a half a square metre. And I'm looking at the amount of people I know now who have no idea about gardening but are yet still growing things. That seems to have changed and flipped around over the centuries, and maybe not centuries, but definitely over the decades. It seems to have come and gone. And in times of frugality, we seem to go from a necessity of growing your own to what you are doing now with Incredible Edibles, which is it's almost like a hobby of growing your own, if that makes sense. Is that a fair way to put that?
No, actually. So I wouldn't say that Incredible.
Right.
Incredible Edible is not a hobby. That Incredible Edible is about changing the way people live their lives. It's about making sure that people learn the skills that mean that if we were ever in another position where we had to say to people, you know, the country is up Whatnot Creek, we need you to grow your own food for a while, that people would have the ability to do that and would also have the community surrounding them to be able to do that. So Incredible Edible is very much not a hobby. Incredible Edible aims to make massive change in people's lives, and also to look at the way we use public realm space, how urban planners work, you know, all of that stuff. Far more than just a hobby. It's not about hobbyist gardening.
Well, let me just clarify that one, Sarah. In a sense, what I'm trying to say is it's not farming. It's not, you're not doing it for, it's not for it, money, to
no,
clarify
no,
that.
No, absolutely, it's not for money. It's for community.
We have we're on the same page here. We're okay. I'm not in trouble just yet.
No, you're not in trouble. You're not in any trouble.
That's okay.
But I think for me, what frustrates me is that, for example, the area that I live in, it was built in the 1930s, began to be built in the 1930s and continued to be built in the late 40s and 50s as areas to clear slums in Bristol city centre. And it was built under with the idea of it being a garden city. And we have, you know, great, huge gardens that, you know, were built and made so that people had enough land that they wouldn't need an allotment and that they could grow their own food in those spaces. And we now have a situation where so many of those gardens are completely underused. And there's nothing wrong with having a trampoline in your garden. You know, that's fine. Children like to trampoline. But you know, whereas once upon a time, people took pride, I suppose, in their gardens and what they look like. You know, we've got to the stage now where people just want to tarmac their front garden, and they want to have low maintenance, whatever that means, in their back garden. And usually that just means a fence, some grass, and a trampoline. It's sad. It's sad. We call it, you know, the British are known as we're a nation of gardeners. But where are all these gardeners? Where are all these normal people gardening? And I just think we need a revival of normal, everyday, in your back garden gardening, because I don't think it's the norm anymore. Without doubt there are people doing it, but I don't think it's the norm. So whereas in the 50s everybody was looking, you know, everybody was out on a Saturday afternoon cutting their lawn. Regularly see lawns that haven't been obviously been cut for years, and you just think, well, you know, that's a waste of land. It's a waste. Why? And often it's because when you speak to people, they say, gardening's expensive. We can't afford to do it. You know, and it's interesting. This year I wrote a blog about the Poundland tools that came out and were endorsed by Charlie Dimmock. And I went and spent a fiver on those tools, you know, in the expectation that they wouldn't be great. They were fine. As tools go, they were okay. I've still got them. I've used them all summer and they're still working. But we need to be able to get that out to people, because it's, you know, gardening as a hobby is starting to have a really kind of middle class thing to it, that people just think, if I haven't got money, I can't afford to do it.
On that note, Sarah, I do have to say, yes, we are where we are, and there is a point and case for that. There's no question about it. On the other hand, there is a lot of great work being done by yourself, and I do have to give them credit, and I do on a regular basis. But for the work that the Royal Horticultural Society is doing to change that, applause must be given indeed. They have a huge amount of programmes on the go between the schools, their ambassadors, and everything else along the way, including their new shows. More than worthwhile checking out. In the meantime, saravenn.com, that's saravenn.com. Anything else you might need, just at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thesideshow and sideshow.com, and all of the information, show notes, links to everything that Sarah has done will be up there. If you need to get in touch, if you're thinking about setting up an incredible edibles for yourself, if you want Sarah to go and give you a talk or a course, just get in touch with her at saravenn.com. Sarah Venn, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. I look forward to having you back on as well, if you'll come back on.
I certainly will, of course.
Pleasure, my dear. Thank you so much for your time. Have a great weekend in the great outdoors. To you for listening, thank you so much. What can I say? It's the tail end of another show. We are all but out of time. At Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thesideshow and sideshow.com. Take care. Thanks for listening. Cheers. Bye-bye. Stop, never get up, never get high and reach the top. Think about thing up being a top thing, and I'm back to you. I don't know all the words, but it's Club 7, man. they could have been one of the greats. See you next week.